My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about Outer Wilds, Echoes of the Eye, which is an adventure game developed by Mobius Digital and published by Annapurna Interactive for PC and consoles in 2021.
Yeah, part two of three of Start Over Month.
Yeah.
We accidentally made Start Over Month.
Hey, remember when we did theme months about a decade ago? They're back.
Yeah. This is, absolute accident. This episode is executive produced by Devin. Big thanks to Devin.
Thanks, Devin.
Yeah. And this is an expansion. This is an expansion. It's meaty. You know, it justifies talking about it. It's a big chunk of gameplay. But it's an expansion for Outer Wilds, which we covered back in 2021.
Yeah. Episode number 307. And Echoes of the Eye was not announced at that point. I went back and looked at the notes, and it ended with the perennial, we don't know what Mobius is doing next.
Yeah, so whatever the future holds. So this is an expansion. So it's kind of like when we did Phantom Liberty earlier in the year. You know, it makes generalities a little bit trickier to talk about because a lot of them are from the main game.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear the basics of what Outer Wilds is like by going back and listening to that episode, which I did not remember that much about how Outer Wilds. I had to remind myself about Outer Wilds stuff. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I knew a bunch of broad strokes, but like the story stuff, I only it kind of faded into simple shapes over time to me.
I remember the cool parts. I remember the parts I liked.
And
technically, you don't need to beat Outer Wilds to reach this content. It would be insane to play this on its own.
Yeah,
it builds on Outer Wilds, and the story and the ending only really has resonance if you played Outer Wilds. Like, it's in conversation with it.
Yeah, and like the coolest thing that this does is a subversion of your expectations from having played Outer Wilds, knowing what that's like.
This is almost like a miniature sequel. You know, this is like a 1.5 is how this feels to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in this, there's a new planet added to the solar system. It is this artificial ring planet created by another precursor race. The main game has one precursor race. Turns out this other one was here the whole time. They came to the solar system a long time ago in order to be closer to this Eye of the Universe.
Yeah, and the Eye of the Universe is important in terms of understanding what this is doing, what this game is doing. I had to literally remind myself of that as well.
Yes.
Like, I knew that the universe restarted at the end of Outer Wilds. Spoilers for the Outer Wilds. But, like, it's a mechanism to rebuild the universe, to recreate the universe, basically. If you witness this thing, you can then have a hand in kind of how the universe gets reborn when it's dying. In this game, though, instead of going from planet to planet, you're going to spend your whole time in this planet called the Stranger. In the previous game, you went from planet to planet, kind of cross-referenced clues. This had knock-on effects. You could bounce off something. The first game, the base game, is more about exploration in that way. Like, I feel like I've done everything I want to do on this planet. I'm going to go check out that other planet.
Yeah. And it had a really robust, like, progress tracking kind of deal. Like, it automatically made a flowchart for you of the things you have learned. And it showed you when there was more stuff to do in a place.
Yeah. This will do that as well. There'll be, like, cool question marks. You can get that kind of, like, cork board. You can pull up on your ship. But it's not all interconnected.
Right. You know,
it's a little bit more claustrophobic, I guess.
Yeah.
And how it feels. Outer Wilds kind of primary mechanic, the big thing it's famous for is this 22-minute time loop. And we are still in the 22-minute time loop. In this.
And, you know, like, I don't know how my feelings on this have evolved since we talked about the original. I remember being generally fine with it. I'm pretty soured on the way the time loop interacts with what you're asked to do in this.
Yeah. I think I've decided I don't like the Outer Wilds is a weird one for me because it's like a game I really admire, you know, and the ending I thought was really moving. But it's a game that when you talk to people or you read other people talking about it, it's a religious experience.
Yeah.
You know, like people feel this game on a level that I don't. And part of it is as much as I like the discovery portion of it, I like the you know, Metroidvania elements. I like, you know, determining these puzzles, right? Like these are cool puzzles. They're clever solutions. I like the aha moments that happen in this. I don't think I like the mechanism of discovering them through a 22-minute loop. And this expansion does a lot of things to complicate that and make it a little bit more frustrating. I can't remember if I said this when we did our first episode. I don't actually like being interrupted very much.
That's the thing.
Yeah. It's a gamer psychographic thing. Some people, it doesn't bother them at all, you know, but if I'm on the case, you know, I'm a bloodhound, I'm fucking sniffing. I'm like, oh shit. Like, this is cool. That feeling is really potent to me. The idea of hearing the, like, it's time to wake up. You know, alarm clock music when that happens fills me with rage. Like, I know I can get back there, but I have a little chore to do before I can get back there. And it ruins all of my momentum and pacing. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
It was, and that's before we introduce, you know, adding to this. You know, Outer Wilds was mostly a brainy, you know, exploration game, but then they also added in dexterity challenges. Like, you kind of play Descent. Sometimes in it.
In a section of the game that people are not, like, happy with. That is not anybody's favorite part of it.
In this game, you kind of play Alien Isolation during parts of it. And, like, that's a maddening combo.
It's kind of beyond the pale to me, actually.
Yeah. It's really rough. It was very frustrating. I know I'm trying to explore. I'm trying to use my brain. I'm trying to have this feeling of, like, archaeology of a truly alien race and trying to figure out their values and their history. That's awesome.
Love it.
Getting interrupted constantly, either through the loop running out or being caught in the stealth stuff, and just fuck you, do it again.
Yeah, fuck you, you know? Do it again.
And it's weird because I'm a guy who likes roguelikes. It feels so different to me, though. Like, I'm not on, when I start a roguelike, I'm starting from scratch. Like, it's a whole new set of concerns. I'm not in the middle of doing something.
Yeah.
And when I go back, I'm not going to be picking that up. Here, I just have to pick it up.
Yeah. It's like getting a phone call every few minutes.
It's like a very specific thing that I'm always surprised that doesn't, like, bug more people. It feels very elemental to me. Like, I feel it in my soul. But I know by the reputation of this game and the, you know, the expansion and the original, it doesn't bother people. Really bugged me. And say what you want to say it says about me, but it really bugged me.
This is something that comes up in the discussion about Majora's Mask, and it's kind of weird to hear it not be more of a ding against this, because I think they appeal to very similar sensibilities in a lot of people, you know, just kind of the structural novelty of that. But, like, when I hear dissatisfaction with this expressed, it is usually kind of framed as the time pressure stresses me out. And having the stealth here, a thing that is added for a lot of people in this in particular is the stealth being done entirely in the dark, you know, adds a lot of horror to it for them. It doesn't for me. All that it adds is a very distinct sense that this developer is in over their heads trying to make a stealth game.
It felt like additive to me, but a mismatch of clauses. Like, I did find this game scary. You know, there were thrilling bits of the stealth for me. Like, I am not as inured to that, you know, to Flashlight House stuff. in this. I'm not in that mode when I'm trying to discover. And I'm I'm in a different mode. And that's a kind of trick that doesn't work over and over and over again.
That's the thing. They could have kept it.
And a lot.
They could have kept it and sold it with a bunch of fake stuff meant to keep you on pins and needles, ready to, just like, oh, I could be yanked out of this at any moment, but kind of, restrict it, make it feel like it's, bigger. I think that like when you look at the descent section of the base game and you look at the stealth sections of this, where the time loop, where the clause mismatch happens for me is combining, okay, I need to understand the order that I need to do things in with any kind of dexterity, with any kind of, with any kind of rigor in how this is executed, right? Because the punishment is, several minutes of getting things back into the right particular way, as opposed to going back to the beginning of the challenge, right? And I think that also gets in the way of experimenting when you're trying to solve puzzles or explore a place.
Yeah, like the rapid iteration. Like there's two aspects of that. Like one, it reminds me a little bit of Talos Principle, where like if you have a mind challenge, but you're also requiring a little bit of bonus dexterity on top, that can feel kind of crappy to me. Like the difference between conceiving of something and executing it. Those are two different game skills, game tasks, and they don't always talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, the other thing is when we talk about stealth, we talk about the danger of getting caught, what that means, right? So like in a more traditional stealth game, you start over from a checkpoint. That's fine. In this, you start over far away on a time limit and you have to get back to where you were to continue pushing any further.
Yes.
Into a thing. The iteration loop is longer than it tends to be in one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Even in, a harsh, like a Amnesia or what have you, those games actually have very generous checkpointing.
Yes.
In them, generally. You do not have to redo too much content.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case in this.
Yeah.
The maximum you could have to redo is 22 minutes. That doesn't sound like a long time. It is. And it's just, they don't work together. It was very frustrating. So ultimately, this game, and this is, as somebody, I found the scary stuff scary. Like, I think this game is scary.
It worked, but not infinitely so.
Not infinitely so. What it means is this is a game of cool, super high highs, but like devastating lows.
Yeah.
Huge moments of frustration. It's in the pile of things I would have stopped playing if it wasn't for the show.
Yeah.
I would have said, fuck this. Life is too short. I don't want to do this.
Breathe the TV tropes, watch endings on YouTube, right?
And probably been okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing this kind of helped me understand a little bit that like the specialness of this, that aha moment, the puzzle, cool bits of this, the Metroidvania stuff that people go crazy for. I'm just calling it that because I don't have a better term and I think it's kind of funny and nerdy and I want to make fun of people who say it. But that part I do get. I like that value. Yeah. It's not something I will trade everything for.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put up a tons for it. I like it. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's good, but I'm not going to crawl through a bunch of barbed wire for it.
The descent section in the original was not enough to sour the entire experience, the way that the way that the bad stealth does in this.
Because there's just more of it.
It
happened at the very end. Like the very tricky descent part didn't happen until the end.
Right.
And it sucked. But like once you pushed through that, you were done.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to say about the stealth in this, two things. One, this is scary and you can turn down the frights in the menu.
Yeah.
I eventually did that. It doesn't turn down the frights. What it does is it makes the enemies reduces their vision cones a little bit.
I wish that was communicated because that is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. It doesn't make it less scary. That is 100% should be communicated to the player. I ended up looking it up out of curiosity and then it was like, okay, this might help. It doesn't turn it down that much. It's still a pain in the ass, but I wish I had done it right from the start. Just word of the wise, if anyone's playing this, if you don't want to deal with, that, you can turn it down. Two, you talked about darkness. The way this game is dark is unlike any other game that I've played.
That was true of the base game too. If you were on the wrong side of a planet and trying to land, you would bust your ship up because you couldn't see shit.
I think that's neat. I don't like how it interfaces with being stalked, you know, with the stealth mechanics of this. That is a cool idea. The contrast between stuff you can see and stuff you can't see is higher in this game than any other game I've played. That like is neat.
The only game that has been like, that has been more pronounced in the, in its darkness is like The Forest.
It's very well. And you were so, when you're doing the stealth, you have a lantern and the lantern in this is very smart. It has a wide angle thing that kind of lights a little bit. And then a spotlight beam, that will give you good vision far away for a very small area.
Yes. And also makes you move more slowly.
Move very slowly.
Makes it easier to be spotted. Yeah.
That is not, it never feels like enough information.
No, no.
You know, like that part was very cool to me about the, not about the stealth, but about like the darkness. I could have, that would have been scary without being socked to me.
Yeah. The second it runs up against, like, I have no idea, like, you know, they might be looking the other way. I have no idea if there's going to be like a guy there.
Yes.
And so to find out, to peek, you know, and learn that he's there by virtue of getting that information, I also hip him and he starts running after me and they move faster than you.
Yeah. You are not, in those scenarios, situations conspire to make you not, mobile.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really irritating, huge asterisk next to the game. Like, we're not going to bag on it the entire time during the episode, but once it gets introduced, it doesn't go away for a long time, and it sucks. Did not like it.
It's kind of painted across the majority of the volume of what you're going to be doing here. It sucks because, like, I can recommend Outer Wilds without an asterisk. Outer Wilds with this, though, it's like a goal.
Well, what's frustrating is that when you get into kind of some of the story and theme stuff that this does, like, the aha moments in this were more interesting to me because it has a different emphasis, you know? In the base game, where it's mostly exploring ruins, there's this culture called the Nomai, and we're learning about them largely through their writing system. You know, you're not quite deciphering a language, but you're doing little bits of that. I'm allergic to deciphering languages. I don't think it's fun. Here, you can't do that. Instead, you have to do, they do their storytelling through visual storytelling. That really worked for me. Like, this idea of, you know, having a reel missing and then finding, you know, that hidden image and then kind of putting that story together.
Super neat moments, kind of whenever it happens, because the base story of what happened here is so much more tragic.
It's a lot better than the Nomai. It's a lot more human, I feel like, even though, you know, these are aliens. There is still one of the problems I had with the Outer Wilds. The first one is it feels like a science supremacy story to me in a weird way. I still think that there is there's still an attitude behind this I don't like. Very much, you know, see also Phantom Liberty, right? Like there is still a, your loved ones last, you know, caring about humanity rather than humans, like the future of the race more than the individuals of the race in a way that I don't like, that doesn't connect with me emotionally, but it's less so here. The DLC has its own ending once you've completed the content, but if you go and then do the ending of the game, you can get an ending in the base game as well.
Yes.
It adds to it.
In addition to some really bleak bad endings that unlock by doing some different stuff there. Are there any other big kind of mechanical differences to hit? Because I ran out when I was making the outline here.
I mean, we kind of just hinted at it. During about half of this, through a world state change, you are without your jetpack and without your verbs.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's there is a big mechanical difference other than just the big one that you're on foot all the time, but you are very on foot.
Yes.
You know, you are exceedingly disempowered.
Development for this began shortly before Outer Wilds was finished itself. They wanted to tell this ghost story, with kind of the trick being, you're investigating these ruins that were left behind by an alien race, only discover that they are not as gone as you think.
Yeah. Story was written before the levels were designed. That's not how the base game was done. I think that's probably why the story's a little bit stronger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, at least a little bit more overall cohesive.
Yeah. The Kickstarter pitch for the Outer Wilds, the base game, included a stretch goal for an invisible planet with a light side and a dark side, like it was going to be coin-shaped. And that is eventually what they worked into this ring world. And they established that dichotomy in a super interesting way.
Yeah. And reviews for this expansion basically fall down where we do almost. You know, generally good, but they don't like the parts that we don't like. Yeah. They like the narrative and aesthetics. Hey, so do I.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just, is it going to be worth it
for me? I'm not arguing with you about that.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, I don't like thinking about games in terms of like, I want this good, so I pay this bad.
Yes.
You know, I don't think that's a good way to look at art, but it is what this felt like to me. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was paying lots of bad in exchange for this good in a way that I regret. Like, no, I don't regret playing. Obviously, it's the, you know, it's for the job, but in a way I wouldn't have left to my druthers. Let's get into it. This is, you know, because it is a Metroidvania. We're not going to just sit there and be like, and then I realized this, and then I realized this, and then I realized this. That would be maddening.
I would feel like a dummy doing that.
Yeah. So the format's going to be, it's a little bit more stretched out. We'll have these revelations that we kind of talk about, but like the actual experience of playing the game is going to be nonlinear and Roomba-esque as you go around looking at stuff.
Yes.
And then looking at your cork board and deciding, hey, I can get over there. What's over there?
Mm-hmm.
That is the vast majority of what you actually do. It's not going to be the vast majority of what we actually talk about.
Yeah. You spend a lot of your time trying to figure out how to get places.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is, again, that's fun, you know, if you're not being interrupted during it.
Yeah. Do we need to do the refresher on the story? Because we kind of hit it.
Yeah, the important thing that we didn't, we are stuck in a time loop. We're a little goober. There's two ancient wise precursor races, and then there's the goober.
Yeah,
like planet, the Hearthians. These guys are just little goofy campers.
Yeah,
and musicians who like roasting marshmallows and live in a post scarcity paradise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know.
The Nomai, like from what you learn about them, they came here specifically because they got a weird signal from the Eye, and they lost the signal, and they ended up kind of dedicating their whole civilization to trying to research how to find it again.
Yes.
And that implicates the events of the base game.
Yep. And again, once you get to the Eye, you know, after this loop, you get to the end. If you can see it, you know, doing quantum shit, things are different if you see them. If you're in the middle of the Eye and you see the Eye, the universe can restart.
Yes.
And not just be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how you do that. It's also the Nomai discovered like time travel stuff. You know, there's the primary kind of puzzle of the first game, I recall, being figuring out their science experiments sent something into the past. So they needed an immense amount of energy to do this. That's the kind of background information we have.
Yeah. Yes. So let's talk about getting to this DLC. If this is installed, there will be an exhibit at the museum in the observatory of your homeworld at Timber Hearth, which is a place that you have to go in order to get the game started. That's where you get your launch codes and stuff. And this exhibit talks about this radio tower and this deep space satellite that the Hearthians have used in order to map the entire solar system.
Yeah. If you go to this radio tower, you know, that kind of tracks us, we can see some odd photos that were taken. And one of them shows a black spot over the sun. There's a little black spot on the sun today. The same old one as yesterday, because you are the king of pain. So you head out to fly along that satellite in order to see the shadow, see what it is. Fly towards it, eventually get so big it engulfs the sun, and we end up inside this strange craft here.
Yeah. That is like cloaked from the outside. And if you're like me, you immediately crash into all of the spinning stuff.
there's a lot of spinning stuff.
Yeah. Before you can kind of like find the hangar. I definitely crash landed and was like, would not have been able to escape on my own steam, which is fine.
I also forgot how to fly.
Yeah.
I didn't have the original game. You fly a little drone that does not control like your ship.
Not at
and
all.
And then crash a lot as you're learning to play. But by the end of the game, you can fly well enough to do a descent section poorly. Yeah. I had forgotten all of my Outer Wild skills.
Yeah. I lost my sea legs.
Yeah. You get to an elevator and we start learning one of the primary mechanics of the society, which is that they have technology that is activated by light.
Yes.
You do this and it allows us to use an elevator by turning it on. It takes us down this huge kind of planet ring space station thing. Mm-hmm. We see the writing, but our translator cannot read it.
Yeah, and that's not gonna change over the entire time. Yeah. This is too old and too unconnected from anything to be translated.
Yeah, you can actually talk to one of your goobers back at the Herthian planet about it, and it would take forever. It's not based on similar enough principles where there just isn't enough time to translate this. So it's not going to be about translating language. The cool thing is, once you get inside the planet, this does look fucking sick.
This is so cool. It was hard for me to wrap my mind around exactly what I was seeing.
It's jaw dropping. Uh-huh. You're inside a ring. Imagine you're on the inside of a ring, you know, and that's the planet.
Yes.
That is the surface. So there's a big river that flows through that. In different kind of in a direction, it kind of goes in a loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you look upward, you can see where straight up, you see where you will be if you walk halfway around the ring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hollow Earth shit, but with just a sliver of that.
Yeah.
Really
cool. You have this river, and as you kind of navigate out onto it in this raft that you steer with your flashlight, you see that there is a dam behind you. The river terminates in a big reservoir. Mm-hmm. And all of the foliage on this is dead. Like whatever was keeping this place, livable, has stopped working.
Yes. Yeah. There are events that happen during the cycle. It's one of the advantages of a time loop game is that you can have a world state change within a set world. Yeah. About halfway through your time loop, the dam breaks. This creates a huge wave. It destroys some buildings, raises the water level, does a bunch of world state stuff that you're going to take advantage of later for exploration.
Yes. And figuring out how this interfaces with the way you get to the other place is, that was the big eureka moment for me.
Yeah. Super neat. Super, super cool as a thing. You're basically exploring, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. We're not going to say, and then I decided to explore this place and I saw this reel, we're kind of learning about these features in the world. We go to these little settlements on the riverbank. Most of them have a theater where we can view these slide reels, use a lantern, light up these slide reels. And we kind of learn the story of these they're owls with antlers. Mm-hmm. That felt a little bit like a Twee store. Take the two popular animals that everybody fucking does.
Everybody loves that shit. Pigs will slap that off, won't you?
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that to me. They're cool looking.
It just
looks like folk horror, like two big things of folk horror mashed together a little bit.
Yeah. Just a way to make something cute when you see it lit up, but have a really menacing silhouette when it's not.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Their mouths are hilarious. There's one of the slide reels has one of them open its mouth and a big whoa thing. And it's very funny.
Yeah. There are those theaters where you can look at, look at the way they've documented, their history. But there's also kind of a hidden room, where they were burning reels, and there are secret reels, that were in the process of being burned, where you can get a partial version of the story.
Yes. And I immediately was like, I'm going to find the real versions of these.
Yes.
I assumed it's time travel, kinda. What happens. I'm going to eventually see the real ones of these, so I need to remember what's missing through here. You also find this kind of ritual room where there are all these murals in the wall and all these little inset kind of, bits with murals where they have lanterns.
Yeah.
We grab these to power the projectors. Yes. That is also something we're going to find the secret of these things too.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's interesting about this game is it does feel like there's just straight up magic.
Yeah,
like the technology of this race
uh-huh.
Is very magical.
There's stuff. I mean, we're past the spoiler wall on this. There's stuff with like seemingly magical flame.
Yeah, there's illusory walls.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Dark Souls style in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no pretense of like, oh, this is quantum. Like you can't observe it, so it changes. Like there is in the base game, right?
Yeah.
So we're not going to talk about like, oh, and you find the hidden room by doing this. Like each of these settlements kind of has their own little deal, but going to focus on kind of what you learn in these places. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. This first one, we're going to be a little bit more detailed talking about it. You go to the River Lowlands. This is the first, settlement along the river, and there's not a real trick to getting around it. The thing that you're going to learn is, you know, about 2/3 of the way through is when the dam breaks and this becomes entirely inaccessible. It's the first place that is washed away.
Yeah. You want to go here first, or, you know, you got to take the water into account of it at least.
Yes.
Couple things we find here, there is a house that has a bunch of research equipment, and also our friend Ghost Matter is back. This kind of the stuff that you walk into, it hurts you. You have a little scanner for it. Mm-hmm. And we see our first artifact. This is like a fancy lantern that has a kind of a shutter on the front. Mm-hmm. We have no idea what to do with this yet, but we do need this to open the secret areas.
Yes.
Kind of later.
Yeah. You're going to be coming back to the shack a lot because it is the easiest and quickest one of these to get.
Yep.
There's also a burned down church, and there's an icon, like a big metal piece that's left over, which is in the same shape as the Nomai symbol for the Eye of the Universe. So they were worshiping this, but something terrible happened.
Yeah, they've burned down a church. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The reels here show us the race. They're like owls with antlers. Mm-hmm. They're very tall. I would see what they're like. And the secret reel chamber's entrance that we get to is always really well hidden. To find this. This one, we have to take a lantern and leave a mural in the dark, which makes the door disappear, basically. Mm-hmm. You have one of these little inset things. If you remove all light, you can push past the wall.
Yes.
Through there. So it feels pretty magic to get there.
Yeah. Whenever you take one of these forbidden reels, you end up sealed into the little chamber. Some of them getting out is just a matter of exploring and trying to find a hole that may be hidden that you can go through. Mm-hmm. The doors for this civilization seem like a nightmare to use. You have to light up a mechanism on the outside of them, and that will cause like a little moon to move around on a disc, and it opens if you turn off the light while it's eclipsing like the green sunlight thing.
Yeah, this is the intuitive leap here is to realize that your little probe, the tiny little camera that you can shoot out and look in different directions, has a light on it.
Yes.
So you can suddenly shoot that through an opening and then look at the light to open it from the outside is the trick for some of these.
Yes. Yeah. A huge thing we learn here is that an owl astronomer had a vision of the Eye of the Universe, and they made the owls build this space station, this planet, to come here, but the middle of that reel is burned and missing.
Yeah, we don't know what they did to do it. Yeah. You know, that's part of the tragedy of this. The second settlement we head to, these kind of cinder isles, structures built on two islands in much deeper water. Mm-hmm. And one island has this huge tower, and we're going to see these towers around. A small projector shows that there is a hidden side to this tower accessible from an underwater cave. So good to know. And the top of the tower has these electrical workings that correspond to those ritual rooms that we've seen all over the Stranger.
Yeah, I thought this was going to be like teleportation. It's not.
No. Yeah. And there's a reel that we can get that's hidden in the secret area that shows us how to walk through the murals in the ritual rooms, which again, we take the lanterns out of the alcoves, and then the painting that contains a blue ringed planet, if we do that, we can then walk through the wall.
Yeah. I had to go back and view this multiple times to figure out that the blue planet was in all of the ritual rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It that's their secret door that they'd use for all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this tower holds up to the initial flood, but will eventually be washed away. That is important for navigating the secret area here later.
Yeah. Yep. Looking at the reels, we learned that through study, the owls learned that the eye would trigger the end of the universe. And this is where you get the owl going, "Oh!" Like a kill owl. and they burned their church to the eye. They freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this thing that we wanted to go check out that we were worshiping is going to destroy everything.
Yeah. This thing we came here for.
Yeah. We're going to see, you know, the cost that they paid for that. That makes this a tragedy.
Yes.
There are burn slides that are around, there are this cabin that are built on nearby lake. Mm-hmm. We have to kind of move upstream to get there. It's a little hidden.
Yeah.
And this tells us how to solve this puzzle in the settlement's secret area once we get there.
Yes. Next one's kind of hard to reach. There's like a series of canyons that you can go into. It's kind of like playing Plinko with your raft. If you mm-hmm. go all the way on the right side, missing this is a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck you, start over a month.
Yeah. Yes. But you go all the way on the right side, you can get pulled up on this elevator to get into a settlement that's kind of built into the sides of this canyon, the hidden gorge here.
Yeah. Navigating these buildings is a little bit tough. You want to get here before the flood if you can, because the flood will wash away the bridges. A reminder that in this game, you have a jetpack during this part, but your jetpack does have limited fuel.
Yeah.
This ancient precursor race was kind enough to have a couple of fuel refill stations installed there. But I did not care for having that being a limited resource during this. Again, I understand it. It's how it was in the main game, but it didn't help anything.
No.
Running out of this and not being able to cross a gap wasn't cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the theater shows the owls in our solar system. They've made it and they're getting homesick mm-hmm. from their world. They're looking at reels from their home and they're crying.
Yeah,
they're very upset. And the middle, we don't see what they do in between. The middle is burned, but then they seal themselves into these coffins and pods.
Yes,
there. There are little like sepulchres about.
Yes, that we have not seen. Importantly,
yes.
There's a laboratory here that we cannot get into. It kind of has these three test chambers that we can see. But a reel that's hidden shows us something that's kind of like, I didn't know what this was until I looked at it in the corkboard. But it shows us a hull breach happening, like one of these portholes kind of on the outside of the ship blows open at a certain point. And that happened in this lab. We have to go back outside and then come back in through this breach in order to see what's in there.
Ultimately, I thought this was cool, figuring this out because I had to, it wasn't from looking at the corkboard. I ended up finding this because I was trying to figure out what caused the dam to burst.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, this had a cause, you know, and it's because of this trauma that the ship faces. Like it ends up facing the stress.
Its mom was really like, withholding.
Yeah. You fight the trauma at the end. It chases you around a $10 million New York apartment. It's A24 is producing it. But like you can see this happen, during the game, if you know to look for it.
Oh,
It's neat. Yeah. So you go in through this, you re-enter through the laboratory and there are those three test chambers. Two of which have the projector staves, and you use these and these will give you a vision.
Yes.
Through these. This is how this race communicates. They point a stick at each other and then show each other what's in their minds, basically.
Yeah. These have been left around from the people who were observing this. And both of the ones that you can see show an owl going to sleep in one of these chambers next to this kind of green fire.
Yes.
And when they wake up, the artifact that they're holding has changed in some way. If it is a lantern that is not lit, it lights up. If it is an artifact that is not lit, it lights up. If it's a lantern, if it's an artifact that's already lit, it explodes.
Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah.
You blow yourself up. And this is one of the kind of minor themelets of the DLC, which is taking actions that were not puzzle components in the base game and making them puzzle components.
Yeah.
You could go to sleep in the main game to pass time, but now you have to do it to do something.
Yes. Yeah. But what we're learning here is sleep next to a green flame with an artifact and it'll light up. So
yep.
That's a thread you can pull.
We'll get an artifact, a working artifact. So you follow the river all the way down around the dam, you reach this reservoir area. And the building here has this combination lock. They have vertical combination locks. They have magical illusory walls, but they also just have straight up combination locks like we do for our bikes. You can see the code by shooting the scout into a part of the building. This is a very standard Outer Wilds puzzle to me. Mm-hmm. Once you get inside, there is a table screen that shows an error message for the stranger. Something has gone wrong on the stranger.
Obviously. Yeah. The theater here does not have a reel because the storage room broke off. Regardless of where the water is, you have to go diving for it, which is fun. And, you know, depending on how tense you find diving underwater to be, especially into an enclosed space.
Yeah.
But when you pull it back, it's mostly burned. But it shows this black bell structure being submerged into the reservoir. Pretty ominous looking.
Yes.
And we've seen reels kind of up to this point without any context, showing people placing seals on some kind of device inside of this.
Yes. At this point, I was like, oh, there are vaults or there are coffins.
Yeah.
They've sealed away somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some kind of great destroyer or something like that. I need to free them because one of the things about this game that's interesting is it's one of the least motivated things I've done mm-hmm. in the game. I don't know why my character is fucking with these people.
Right.
Like, sincerely, it's, like, yeah. we're going to find out they've created like a Lotus Eater machine for themselves. They've created a Joy-Can
mm-hmm.
and we're going to fuck it up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're
restart the universe. Like, they're just literally reliving their idyllic life, playing music and hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
On a loop for all time, and we're just going to end that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why we're doing it.
I don't know why I'm freeing this person other than video game curiosity. Yeah, something's locked and I need to know what's inside of it.
And you could, you know, that's one of the things with the Hearthian race is that they are, you know, curiosity driven, you know, and you could argue that's what happens in the main game as well.
Yes.
You're just doing stuff because you want to figure it out. But like, it was just very funny to me once I realized like, they seemed okay. Like until I started fucking with their shit.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't seem like they have a sad story, mm-hmm. you know, and I can't give them back what they actually want. All right. I can do is break them out of this loop and end the universe.
Yeah.
You know, by beating the main game.
Mm-hmm. But we're not letting out somebody who's like terrible. Like it's not you know, we unseal
this sympathetic person,
Necros Gozer. Or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whatever the Final Fantasy IX Force of Death guy is. We're not doing that. Yeah.
I defy anyone to remember the name of that.
Yeah. Somebody will. Yeah. Yeah. But this bell is here. And if you go down there, you can see where some of the three seals are. And there is a green bonfire, the first of these that we've found. And if you bring an artifact here, you can doze. Mm-hmm. It'll take you to a place, but you can't really do anything. But this is where we can learn to put this into practice.
Yes. Once you get here, you doze and we get this, we bring the artifact to the fire, we go to sleep and we're taken to the sealed vault. And this is one of the coolest moments of the game, mm-hmm. Being somewhere else from this doze. Again, you don't know if you teleported, you don't know if you traveled through time or anything mm-hmm. like that. I'm very glad that the first two things I thought it was is not the case.
Yes. Yeah.
That isn't what this is. It does blur that line between technology and magic in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of feels like it did the thing it needed to do.
Yeah.
You know, to me,
the reveal again, of what this actually, the reveal yeah. of what this actually is plays super nice with what the solution to the puzzle is to get these. Right.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no way to open this up here. Like there's, you know, there's no mechanism to open the chain. So we've got to do this somewhere else. If you go to those ritual rooms, you can go into the hidden chambers. They have their own green fires, but also they are surrounded by these little alcoves near the pods where people were going to and found where the owls are. Mummified. They're mummified around these fires.
The first one of these I found, there was one missing.
Oh, shit.
You know, so, I was like, I thought, oh, that's the person who's locked up.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that actually... kind of true, but like I thought because of perhaps sinister reasons.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
One of the go ahead, sorry.
No, the one missing made me think that was what I was going to be running from.
Yeah. Yeah. Which would make sense. Yeah. And this leads to one of the coolest moments of the game. I almost cut you off because I got excited.
Yeah.
You doze off in one of these and you wake up in this other world. You don't know if it's time or teleportation or what, but the owls are gone. That's great.
I love it so much. It's also so dark inside. So like, you kind of have to move out of the center and see, and then you focus and see like, oh no, like they're all gone. What happened to them? What is different about this? Are they threats?
Like, very scary, like expertly, kind of directed,
uh-huh.
you know, the way it controls what you can see, mm-hmm. Really, really good.
Love it.
Yep.
So, depending on where you go to sleep, depending on which of the little settlements you go to sleep in, you wake up in a different part of this thing that is called the secret world. In the ship tracker, right? Kind of different realms that correspond vaguely to what the previous areas are. You wake up in a room that is identical to where you fell asleep. The owls are gone, and the area around them is different. It is not just like a dark world version of the place you have been.
No. Time travel, again, was my first thought. You know, because time travel is in the main game. And we're going to find out it's kind of a version of that.
Yeah.
You're going to go between these realms on the raft through these very dark tunnels that you head through. Mm-hmm. And the artifact that you have when you're here has this green flame. And it has three states, as we mentioned before. You can either focus or conceal it or just let it go. Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful. If you fall into the water, you wake up.
Yes.
Your presence in this world is tied to the flame being on.
Right. So there's some platforming with stakes here. You wake up where you were, you know, the time passes, like figuring out that time passes as normal because you can hear shit happening. You can hear the, you know, different state, like through your, you know, through your sleep. That is another eureka moment here.
The way that's also utilized in the puzzle later is cool.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are objects that can be made to appear or disappear by being lit up with candles. You can do this at a distance by focusing your flame through these mouth-like apertures, kind of like totem kind of things.
Yeah. There are giant there are different giant organs that will do things.
Yes.
Giant mouths, you can light or blow out flames. Mm-hmm. And you can hear your character goes, whoo, and then it blows them out. Like it gets amplified by this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are hand sculptures where if you focus your light on them, you kind of zip to them. But it does it with this weird like optical effect that is like a really pronounced like push-pull and then going back out of it. So it kind of compresses space optically and then you're there.
Yeah. It's neat. It's also, you're not just turning on and off lights, as we mentioned. You'll turn on and off like scenery.
Mm-hmm.
You can look through one of these mouths and use your light, shine it through that, and have like things literally appear.
Yeah, there's a sense that if it is not lit, it does not exist.
Yep. Again, playing with the kind of quantum stuff in the main game, what's actually happening here is different.
Yes.
When we look up, we're not on the ringed planet space station. We're under a starry sky, and we can see a ringed planet. We're in the home system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the original version of this world. Again, making me think it was time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So like we got to go back. We got to go back to each of these places and go through the ritual rooms there. So the River Lowlands lets you get to the Shrouded Woodlands. And this is a very large, boggy area. Dubai. Yep.
Yeah. You fight a Teeves, you fight a Tassins.
Mm-hmm.
Fight all of them.
This has one of the coolest moments in the game. The presage is the worst thing about it.
Yeah. As you're walking around in this bog, you see other lights moving. Uh-huh. And even in the main game, it was unusual to have other critters.
It was just the other Hearthians and they were stationary.
Other goobers playing instruments. Yeah. Goobers playing instruments. This is weird. You know, it reminds me of like this happens with a lot of games where you just don't interface with other people. Mm-hmm. Think about like BioShock.
Yeah.
How like whenever you talk to somebody else, they're behind a screen.
Yeah.
Or something like there aren't just people around. So like when that actually happened in Infinite, that was a neat part of it.
Yes.
Like you're not used to being in a world that's alive. They're both games where you're after a disaster and kind of doing archaeology.
Yeah.
Having active movers is strange.
Yes.
No. Very cool. Here.
It's the owl people. Is what this is. You know, the ones who were, you know, disappeared before. Yeah. And they don't want you here.
Yes. You are an interloper. This sucks because you're going to be in the stealth zone now. I do love the animation.
It's really good.
Yeah, they run up and grab you and it looks like they are just going to reel back and kill you, but they just blow out your lantern.
Yeah, it's like they open their jaws up real wide, like they're going to take a bite or something.
The nun you, yeah.
Yeah, and they blow out they blow out the flame. We're going to find out later that this could kill you. And they are indifferent to that. They just want you out.
Yep, you're not supposed to be here. Again, me feeling like an unmotivated interloper in this. The people who own this place clearly don't want me here.
Right.
But goober's got a goob.
Mm-hmm.
So the owls are all walking in a path towards this underground bunker. You have to see where this bunker is. It's not hidden through an illusory wall like everything else.
It's just hard to see. This is a huge area. You already can't see shit because of the light. Yeah. Yep. You're not going to find it naturally.
And you can't just follow them in. If you just try to follow them in, there are too many of them. They're going to catch you.
Right. The other thing that's kind of limiting you from doing full exploration here is the fact that when the dam breaks, you are yanked out of the secret world because the bonfire has gone out.
Yep. So all of this kind of stealth and looking around the secret world where we're going to spend most of our time now is limited on a very short time frame. There's a kindness when you get restart your limit, your actual thing. You can autopilot.
Yeah. You don't have to do the whole go to the satellite and come back. Yeah.
It's very funny. A character says, "Hey, we had this thing this whole time. I just forgot to tell you about it." and tutorializes it. One of the guys by the fire. It's real cute. Uh-huh. It's still friction. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still time that you're taking between exploration loops.
Getting to the stranger is not the problem. It is getting to where you need to be inside the stranger or in this little realm inside of it, or later in the realm that's inside the realm.
And so, the realm within realm. Like, there are multiple sets of setup before you can actually start playing and exploring. Mm-hmm. And the maximum amount of time between having to do those is 22 minutes.
Yes.
Again, sounds like a long time, but it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough time.
Yeah. So. When you're doing stuff.
Yes.
So there's a trick to this. The fires go out in order for how it goes through. Some of them never go out. So one of them goes out slightly later than the other. So what you have to do is go to another ritual room and then go on the raft to the shrouded woodlands. And then when that fire is doused, if you're near one of them, when this happens, you see them all disappear in a burst of green light and they scream in anguish.
Yeah. Hurts them. Yeah. But you want to be in one that's better protected from the flood so you can do stuff. Mm-hmm. And this bunker still has some owls in it. So those must be resting elsewhere or they, mm-hmm. When you're inside the shadow realm.
Yes.
There's still owls. So we had to find there are more owls out there. The mm-hmm. stealth never goes away even after these owls get killed.
Yes.
This thins them out a little bit.
Yeah. And it just means you have to stealth even when you get into the bunker. It's not like everybody here is gone. And so you're just kind of poking around looking to find an elevator. And each of these little shadow realms has a forbidden archive loaded with the complete and unburned reels.
Yes, which we've been waiting for the whole time. Genuinely cool moment to find these. One of my favorites, you find this reel and it has an owl on the raft. When it passes through a tunnel, a loading bar shows like a video game.
Yeah, you know, it's a simulation.
This is where it reveals we haven't traveled back in time or anything. We're in a holodeck, basically. With the realm as being unloaded, a new one is being loaded in, and the owl jumps off the raft. During the load times.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Falls through the world like it's a clipping error or something.
Yeah. Like using the language of video games as actually part of this is undeniably super fucking cool.
Super.
Love it. A
ton of ingenuity in that.
Yeah. Like brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, I get huge high highs in this game. Like as much as I was frustrated playing it, like that was a super cool moment.
Love it.
Yeah. And then we get the tragic part of this, the story part of it, where we find out what they did in order to go to the stranger. So they saw the stranger. They're like, we got to check that shit out.
They saw the eye.
Yeah. They saw the eye. Thank you. And to build the stranger, they completely strip mine their planet.
Mm-hmm.
They took out everything, basically just destroyed the whole thing.
Yes.
Clear cut.
Yeah. And, to get the materials that they needed to come and worship this thing that they would uncover horrible facts about.
Yeah. Which like, don't.
I mean, don't, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe don't do anything. Don't do anything you can't undo based on a vision.
Don't please. Put down anything you can't call up. so you enter, We enter through the tower that's in the Cinder Islands. And this area is a little bit more built up. There are a lot of houses and walkways organized around the central shrine of some kind. One of the things that I find a little bit irritating about this is how empty the spaces are in both versions of the world. Like, there are residential areas with like two chairs and one portrait. You know, like, all these people did was sit around and watch movies of things they'd already done and play instruments. And like, when they're playing instruments, I'm like into it, you know, like, that's cool. That makes sense. But it doesn't give a very rich idea of the culture. And at first I thought it was like, oh, it's because it's the space station, you know, this is obviously very Spartan. But even in their simulation.
Yeah. Their ideal life is just chairs. And, you know, even when they don't think that you're there, most of what they're doing is skulking in the dark.
Yeah. And I love sitting. Like, I'm not being critical of that.
It's great.
You know, they're cooking with that one, but like, you know, so.
But we're in this area is called the Starlit Cove, and we want to get to the center of this.
Yep. And this introduces, there are these alarm poles we can walk up to. When we get close, they shine a red light on you, and this chime goes off. And if the chime goes off long enough in the simulation, it causes a chime to go off in the ritual chamber, where you're actually sleeping, and wake you up. We've seen these bells. We could ring them with our probe and stuff we want to our scout.
Getting to another place from here involves finding a difficult to locate kind of like remote lighter and blowing a tower into existence. And this is one of the ways that you can create and get into a tower that is that coincides with the tower on the Cinder Isles in real life. You can get in there and then light up a bunch of candles that will create a hidden room or an entrance to a hidden room inside the hidden portion of the sealed tower.
Which that sentence was impossible to follow. And not critical. It's just kind of like, my point being, in this part of the game, you're doing a lot of like, and then you go to the side of the bridge to blow out this candle, which allows you to get to this side of the bridge to light up this candle, which opens up this tower, which lights up this bridge. We're firmly in fucking around with latches and doors territory here.
But what this gets you to is a room where there are all these sealed containers that we've seen people passing back and forth to each other, to go and find, to take to the sealed archives. When you're in here and you open it up, you see that whatever's inside is a passcode that has been burned away.
They did not want anyone to get this.
Yes.
Your goal, you know, we found this in a reel in Cinder Lake, is to get into this well that's dug up in the center of the settlement. When we get here, an owl hands a container to another owl and watches them descend on the staircase. So we've seen that.
Yes.
The sentry tower near the well is lit by candles. You can't douse your own light to hide here, because that puts you out. You know, you have to find the secret vantage point and blow out all the candles there, and then stealth your way to the entrance to get past those red lights.
It's a lot of ground you have to cover through a lot of choke points guarded by very angry owls to get from where you blow out the, to get from any place on the edge of this down to the center.
We say you just do it. What we really mean is you iterate a bunch of times, you get caught.
Yeah. We're kind of glossing over the most frustrating parts of the game when we talk about that.
We do this largely to get a reel. And this is another very revelatory reel. This is a reel that's an experiment that tracks brain waves of the owls when they use the green flame. One goes to sleep with the green flame holding the artifact. They phase into the secret room, but they just have to be taping when one person does this and dies.
Has a heart attack or something.
It's very funny. Like, what a quinky-dink. They just happen to be doing this one. And they're shocked to find out that if you die while you're in the simulation, you get to live on in the simulation. Your brainwaves get uploaded.
If your body dies in the real world in proximity to the green flame, your mind is still uploaded. And we see in the next frame, or in the next reel that we find, that waking up, the flame going out when you're asleep, you just return to your body. If your flame goes out when your body is deceased, there's nothing to return to. So you just completely blink out of existence. You're gone.
When you die in the video game, you die in real life.
When you die in the video game, you either wake up or die in real life, depending on if you've already died in real life.
Yes. When you die in real life, you live in the video game. it's teaching you. But again, neat. Uh-huh. Like they discovered like a singularity thing, basically. Yeah. You know, you can upload yourself to the conscious. You can do Soma shit, you know. But you have, it doesn't feel like Soma shit because we've done it. We've gone back and forth between this thing and we know there's continuity of consciousness.
Consciousness, yeah.
You know, because we've experienced it. It's not playing Soma tricks on you.
No.
You know, where it doesn't feel that way, at least. You know, who's to say, right? But it feels like they've actually figured it out.
Yeah, they figured out a dream you can live in forever.
Yep. And you kind of start putting together the tragedy of this is they put together this dream you can live in forever that is like the home planet they destroyed to get here.
Yes.
That's very sad and great.
Yeah, and they live on forever inside of it, even though their physical bodies are long dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
We get a reel with a complete version of the prophecy of the eye, and the priest sees the signal from the eye and figures out the eye will end everything. So they burn their temples to it and they make a device that they can launch towards the eye to stop the signal. They do not want anyone else to find the eye and restart the universe.
I mean, they don't even know if it's going to restart. All they know is that it'll be an end. And I think that is the big like moral of this is that their fear of the unknown stopped the actual cycle that would, you know, make things better.
Yes. Yeah. Would make things better because they didn't know. Yeah. This is one of the kind of pro science, pro curiosity outlook of these games that I don't gel with entirely. Where like, to me, this feels pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
The degree to which they torture the person who does this, who like shows the signal, we're going to get to that, is ludicrous.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know, unimaginable, like Greek myth style torture. Mm-hmm. And it's because they think it will end everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't know, you know, the idea that you're just supposed to YOLO because like maybe this thing that destroys the earth, like, I don't know, it'll maybe make things good. Actually.
It's a huge leap of faith. Yeah.
That's bonkers to me.
Yeah.
Like I don't, and them wanting to be like, okay, we did this thing. We fucked up. Let's make sure the universe doesn't end. And let's make again, this life where we can hang out and vibe and play music, you know, and stuff like, I don't hate that. I don't think that's, but all of the semiotics of this are condemnatory of that. They're burning books. They're burning churches. Mm-hmm. You are meant to think that they are wrong for doing this. When you get to the bonus ending of this, where you talk to the one living member of this race, they're pretty critical of their people, but they didn't know. Like, they're just like, it was stupid of them to be scared of this. And like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Like he even admits he didn't know what it was going to do. Like he just saw what the fear was doing to a society and decided to go against it. Like, you know,
YOLO, you know, like I don't know, try it. And like that, again, playing a little bit into that Phantom Liberty stuff, like when you start philosophically conceiving of humanity instead of humans, I think that there is a, you know, and again, who knows if it's just 2025 brain or like mourning or whatever, but I've never felt more against that stance in my life. Like the only thing that matters is people, like the people that exist, you know, take care of the people who are here now, eat the food on your plate.
Yes.
You know, killing everyone is not your coin to gamble with.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It is not their risk is not yours to take, right?
Yes. It reminds, when you talked about Cabin in the Woods, you know, a similar kind of thing. Like, I'm just going to destroy the whole system because this thing's unjust. And it's not your fucking system to destroy. Mm-hmm. You know, it really bothers me when something will take a kind of like a moral valiance that is in that direction. Mm-hmm. It just, it undercuts a lot of the emotionality to this. Like, I think the story is very human and very sweet in that the story of this race that gave everything and were mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, this thing that they thought would be a savior and very cool and like worship, you know, worshiped it. And it was a mistake and they gave everything for it. That's very tragic.
Yeah.
It's very heartening, the idea that they found a way to basically become immortal from that and to live in where they wanted to live, you know, and have the lives they gave up. It doesn't feel, you know, yes, it works out in the end, like a new universe shows up, and the way that this end game ends is very bittersweet and like hopeful. In terms of like what I can apply to the real world from this, it doesn't work for me.
There needed to be we're talking about like endgame stuff, but we're in the middle of it. It feels like a narrative problem that they could have, to my mind, easily patched over by making the person they sealed away have a little bit more motivation. You know, he had his own vision. You know, there is, you know, a piece of information that he is acting on that they will not accept the risk to take.
Yes.
You know, thought, and that makes it more into a story of a leap of faith, right?
Yes. You know, he was the religious figure who believed, but he had a reason to it. It wasn't just like, oh, I don't know, might work, you know, as a thing. And like, this is also something where I'm only speaking for me. Other people might think, you know, like differently, you know, about this. I know people get an intense amount of emotional, you know, relief and kind of comfort from the ideas in this thing. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah,
you know, I'd rather miss people while they're alive. Yeah. You know, I don't need to risk anybody.
Yes, and somebody who does see this as a leap of faith story, I'm amenable to those. You know, those are good and cool. You know, might say like, oh, if he had a piece of information that like, hey, this was going to work out fine, then it wouldn't be. But that could have been a Cassandra story. That could have been, you know, like he was pretty sure of what it was, but even then there was doubt. Then you're playing in a really cool gray space. The fact that there is not a justification for the decision I made does make this feel disconnected from anything human, right?
It makes it curiosity, like the base game, it makes curiosity the only virtue that matters. Mm-hmm. Like learning is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the philosophy behind both the studio's projects. And I just don't agree with that. Yeah. Like I like learning. I'm not against learning, but I'm not, you know, I'm not against, you know, again, gambling with money that's not yours. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason why we're talking about endgame stuff here is this is when I started putting things together a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, this is where like all of this stuff was kind of shaping together. Like the big reveal that the prisoner was not acting on information was a real slap in the face, but even until this point I was seeing the pieces that they were using, like these are the ideas they're playing with.
There's one other complete region you can go to from the Hidden Gorge ritual room. This is the real nadir of the game for me. It is just a stealth challenge. You kind of spawn in, you know, on one side of a canyon opposite of this huge lodge. And we go over there while everything is lit up. There are no enemies, but there's also nowhere to go. There's a painting that clearly you're supposed to go through, but none of the flames can be doused from the inside. You have to douse all of them at once from the opposite side of the gorge and then get across there as it is full of the patrolling owls.
Yep. Very demanding. Mm-hmm. You know, to do this, to get to this hidden archive here. There's a hint reel that we found earlier that shows an owl walking across an invisible walkway to get here. Mm-hmm. The way you do this is eventually the little combination locks, the bike combination locks you have, actually raise and lower bridges that'll exist, whether they, you know, whether you can see them or not that you can use. Down here, we find the reel of that homesickness completely, you know, just underlying stuff we already have basically figured out. Yeah. The owls created a version of their home world because they're homesick and they destroyed their world.
Yeah. Another reel shows us an owl walking with its artifact, and it shows what the artifacts are doing when they're lit. It creates a bubble that manifests the world around them. They can drop the artifact, and then when they walk far enough out of it, suddenly they see the wireframe. Like what's happening here is like a little bit of it's the video game technology frustrum culling. Like it only renders what you can see in order to save resources.
Yeah. And you can put down your lantern. Again, playing in that space that the DLC is, which is taking mechanics you've always been able to do, you know, and do them. Like you would have had a reason to put down your lantern. I needed to see, but you could have. And if you do, you can leave the kind of the simulation and go into the bare bones of the simulation. This ends up being a thing that to me was a little bit frustratingly arbitrary feeling. Leaving the simulation and going into that zone was really cool looking, to go into the Tron zone. And you could see, it felt a little arbitrary what things would be open or closed in or out of the simulation a little bit. Like, it gave me a new thing to try everywhere. And it wasn't something where, it was something where I was just trying. I wasn't necessarily intuiting.
The only utility that it has, like maybe for stealth, you would be able to, because like you can more clearly see what the detection range is. You know, what individual people are able to see with their lights. That would have been super fun to know earlier, actually, to like pathfind, because a big part of this is finding your way through an unfamiliar space in the dark while avoiding enemies. But like the trick of this that helps you unlock the vault is, you know, this lets you see the invisible walkways. You know, this wasn't like an Indiana Jones thing. This was, you know, something that was there. It just was not revealed to you.
So we now we have what we need to open up the sealed vault, but getting to it through the underwater structure doesn't, we don't have everything we need to open it once we get there. We had to break these seals.
So to make the mechanism that will break the first seal appear, you have to get at that little region from the outside. So if you do that tunnel glitch and jump off the raft while the new area is still loading, you will just fall straight through to the underwater lake, which is, or the underground lake, which is this big area that, like a video game having, you know, this dungeon is technically in the same space as this dungeon, you know, that you just can't get from one to the other. It shows that all of the forbidden archives are in the same realm bubble as the sealed vault is. So you drop onto this lake and then walk toward the sealed vault. And as you approach, you can ignite a flame that will reveal the mechanism that opens the first lock. So that is using, you know, the knowledge of how to break the simulation here, using the loading screen to get your first. And the other ones, you know, also take advantage of these other glitches that you learned about in the Forbidden Archives.
It's kind of a nice means of version, because I spent the entire time thinking I was going to have to find three codes, you know, for this. And they're all those very, you know, inside the churches, big burned out codes. You know, and this is, you don't actually get to them through codes. You get to them through these glitches. You know, which is really neat. The second seal, you need to figure out how to be invisible to those sentry towers. And the way you do that is you enter the world dead. So your dedication to curiosity and ruining these people's VR experience is so much that you'll self-immolate.
Die in the most painful way you can.
Many times. I will set myself on fire so many times to stop these people from having a holodeck adventure. Like,
But this lets you walk past the tower without being woken up.
Because you're dead.
And the third seal... lets you see kind of the tumblers of the lock that you're turning. It lets you see the, you know, how you are affecting the composition of this walkway as you are messing around with the combination.
It's really, and also just if you haven't played the first one, you know, when you're dead, you'll still come back out of the time loop. Even though if your lantern goes out at that point, then it ends the time loop because you've died. So we can now go inside the secret room at the bottom of this elevator. And we reach out for this lantern and a hand comes out of the darkness and an owl comes out. The first time we've seen one, he's missing a horn. We've seen him in previous reels. This is the prisoner. And this is pretty great. He's not unfriendly at first. He does the projection staff to show you what happened to him. And basically this is what we were talking about earlier. He disagreed that the owls were afraid of the eye.
He disagreed with their fear of the eye. He knew they were afraid of it.
He knew they were afraid, but he thought that was foolish. The end of the universe, you know, they thought the end of the universe was unnatural. He thinks it was good. So one day he woke up and used the access codes to turn off the suppression field. This is what allowed the Nomai to find the eye and set the events of them into motion. He was discovered after a few minutes. And the owl priest turned the field back on and then built a vault to hold his body and his mind forever in prison for hundreds of thousands of years in a tiny room.
It's as angry as you can be. Just absurd. Hundreds of thousands of years with no contact. Not only was his body sealed away to die forever, but he was completely locked away virtually, unable to interact with anybody, just confined to a single room.
Remarkably sane. For that having happened. And to them, it's like, oh, you are ending the universe. You know, you have risked ending the universe to do this. It's a huge, horrible thing to do. But again, I think that they make that so extreme to extra villainize them to make it so it's not understandable that they wanted to not have the eye discovered.
Yes.
There. He then, I really like this, he hands you the staff so you can show him your vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can kind of show him what has happened since he was locked up.
Yeah. I like how your vision is in a, like a cruder style because you don't really know how to use the vision staff. So it's kind of cartoony. So, you know, like the strange shows the stranger withering away, like, hey, here's how this looks in the real world. No longer looks like your home planet. It's gone.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody was locked in a simulation. They never came out.
They didn't care tend it. You know, it lasted for a very long time, but eventually it had trauma. Like it got this this breach, this hull breach.
Yes. Yeah. A long time passed. You know, the Nomai got the signal bleep and came over here and came to the solar system. Couldn't find the eye because the signal was suppressed again. So they built a civilization to study it and went extinct themselves for the Harthians to find them. You know, we see our player character as a little kid being enamored with the archaeology and then going into the ship. And that's how you got here. And the prisoner, upon learning this, lets out just a keening wail.
Yeah. Very, very upset that's how things have gone down. The universe hasn't ended yet. You give him the staff. One of the biggest laugh I got in this, he just leaves. And for a second, it doesn't seem like the elevator is going to come back down. Like, you're the prisoner now. And I was losing it. I was like, that is the meanest subversion I've ever seen in a video game.
Yeah.
It's not the case.
They knew this guy. They knew he was a dick.
Yeah. And I figured out at this point he wasn't, you know, the monster man. Like, you know, but the idea that he would just be like, okay, later. And fucking later tails you was very funny to me. He goes up the elevator to leave, but the elevator does come back down.
Yes.
Phew. Yeah. You follow in his footsteps and you find he's walked up to the water's edge and he disappears. Mm-hmm. And if you look into the staff, you can get a vision of you and the prisoner stepping onto a raft and riding off into the sunset.
Yeah. Saying now the end can come and we can go into it together. But he's killed himself through this.
Yep. I would have too, after hundreds of thousands of years being stuck in a room.
I probably would have tried to find a way. I would have found a way before several hundred thousand years past.
Yeah, that chair would be in little pieces and in my body, I think. So the new endings you get are reached in the sequence of actions that you learn about over the course of the game through this that you can find. When you find the Nomai warp drive, you can bring it to the stranger and wait for the sun to go supernova. I didn't do this. I just read about it.
Yeah. I watched video of this.
Yeah.
So if you're in the real world with the warp drive, when it goes off, the stranger will be able to warp away fast enough to outrun the advancing wall of the heat death of the universe. But now you're stuck alone. And you get get some text here, incredibly bleak. Now, beyond the reach of the supernova, you find yourself the only inhabitant of an abandoned world. Surely something here must be edible.
Yeah. Sad. If you're in the simulation when the blast goes off, your physical body dies, but your mind is still in the simulation. And you get another message, how much time has passed. They don't even bother to hunt you anymore. Time passes and passes until your life before is some kind of half-remembered dream, if only you could wake up. You are not enjoying being in the holodeck forever.
No. It's weird that they do not try and make contact with you to learn about what's going on. But
you play a different instrument than they do.
Uh-huh.
You know?
You can bring them new technology.
You bring them hoedown. Yeah. Earthian hoedown.
Yeah. The good ending is reached by just doing what you need to get the true ending of the regular game. You take the warp core to the Nomai ship that's caught in that bramble, and you will be shot into the eye. This is where things get all psychedelic, and you talk to these other characters to decide which memories to carry forward into the new universe. In the base game, even though the Nomai are all dead, you can bring a Nomai here to talk to talk to one for the first time. And just like here, if you completed the DLC and observed what happened to the prisoner, he'll be here too, and you can speak with him.
Yes. And he's off from everyone else. You know, he's separate. And this is where he talks about how learning about the eye was fatal for them. You know, it made them paralyzed with fear. He tried to fix it, you know, but he's still of them, even though he was going against them at this point.
Yeah.
He's still that race.
He was still afraid. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can invite him or not to be there, one of the witnesses at the end of the universe and influence what comes next.
Yes. Yeah. If you do, right before the end, he says he never hoped for anyone to get that signal that he let out. It was, you know, a gesture in his mind. And he says, how beautiful. It's different than I'd envisioned. Whatever happens next, I do not think it is to be feared.
Yeah. And that is the, you know, the message it wants to leave you with.
Yes.
The game tells you that it's not to be feared. I still understand the people fearing it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea of, you know, it's telling me a story of a guy who took this risk and gave everything up in order to possibly let out a signal that there might be hope in the future when nobody knows anything.
Right.
When even the characters who are his culture do not know about the heat death of the universe. Mm-hmm. The only thing they know is that the eye is going to fuck everything up. It's not like something that they understand as a supernova that's going to, you know, or that there's going to be this supernova that's going to kill everything.
Mm-hmm.
To them, they had already made their sacrifice.
Right.
There's a framing of this that portrays the rest of the Owl People as extremely heroic. They gave up their home planet and then tried to stop the signal so nobody else can destroy the universe. Mm-hmm. Like, they sacrifice their culture and live in the joy can forever. So living goes on.
Yes.
And then one dude on a hunch says, nah. And the end of the game is like, no, that guy was right though, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of, it same kind of feeling after the first one where it's like very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are good ideas in it. Like, it's very moving. The music is beautiful. Like, the visuals are very beautiful. It's a very beautiful idea that I find very hard to map onto anything you're real.
Yeah.
To connect with in a real emotional way.
Yeah. And the idea that, hey, this thing that you're afraid of might actually be good for you, so go into it so something new can happen, is a little bit basic for all of the contrivance that got you here.
Yeah.
You know, because the reality is, like, the universe was going to end whether the eye did it or not, you know? And by letting out this signal, you know, it got people here to get into the eye to observe it so that the new universe could be reborn. So, like, ultimately it was redemptive what he did, but there was literally nothing to base that on. Not even the Nomai, not even the Harthians knew that that was the case.
Yeah. It's unmotivated. You know, it ends up coming off as like naive to me, philosophically.
Yeah.
Or not philosophically, morally, I guess.
Yeah. Philosophically, too, kind of.
Yeah.
But it depends on the levels of, you know, realism or pessimism you want to have. Yeah. I think the reasons people do things do matter.
Yes.
For a story, at the very least, right? Like, your story can't be people doing random stuff just because they want to see what happens next.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it is a thing that, like, the spirit of adventurism and science does involve doing things just to see what happens. That, as a principle, to me, works in the real world only so far as it's not risking.
Well, they're doing it to try and solve problems, right?
Yeah, yeah. They're not just doing it for shits and giggles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like one of the most, like, shits and giggles games. Like, your characters do stuff because it's fun to do it. But instead of it just being fun, you know, and just being a video game, at the end, it lends this, like, moral weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
It says, like, no, actually the only thing that's worthwhile is doing things for shits and giggles.
Yeah.
Your whole culture is about exploring. Here's a super smart culture that was all about exploring. And here's a real bad culture that was not about exploring.
Yeah.
Look at these idiots. Like, it just, it doesn't feel right to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the difference between... Those huge moments are huge. Like, it feels really good. It's a good story. It's the difference between something that, like, can actually touch my heart, though. And it's not that I have to agree with something for to touch my heart, but this just ends up feeling so alien to how I conceive of being a moral person.
My heart is touched on the way, but they take like two steps after that and my heart is no longer touched.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something that happens in the base game too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, ends up being a thing that I think is generally overall good-ish. I would love it if they patched out the stealth stuff and made the non-scary mode just kind of get rid of it.
Must be a mod.
Right. It has to be a mod. It would go by a lot quicker, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe that's why they didn't want to do that. But like, it's not good content. It's not additive to the experience, I don't think, other than that kind of first scare when mm-hmm. it first happens.
I go back to, you can do so much to sell fear, even when it's not there, right?
Yep. Glad I played it. Mm-hmm. It did for me solidify that, like, for this type of game, the process is unfun enough for me that I'm not sure I really like playing them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the highs, like thinking back on the highs of this, I'm like, oh yeah, that was fucking sick. That was a cool thing to learn and figure out. It just, I don't like it that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's cool, but it's not a primary driver for Gary's.
Yeah.
You know, I'll put up with a lot of shit, but I don't want to put up with that. You know, the stuff I had to put up with here that much.
The stealth is too much to ask. I think you told me in Slack, like, you had to, like, go outside, like the uncle with the Clydesdales.
Yeah, I had to go outside and pray to Mecca. I got so mad that I had to, like, the uncle who had to go outside because the Clydesdales are praying to Mecca. It's frustrating. Like, it was already frustrated by the time limit. Uh-huh. And then adding in the shorter time limit from getting caught just felt like wild to me. It feels, it's Outer Wild. That's what the title refers to. It's fucking wild they do that.
Yeah.
And again, every mileage is gonna vary, you know.
Absolutely.
Anytime you take a new media, it's a journey to the center of the self. Like, you're figuring yourself out more. Yeah. Just me figuring out, like, I like this ship, but not that much, is important to me.
Yeah. So it spends a little bit further to me, but the stuff that's added in here mechanically does cause it to come up short. I'm sure people who love this game, they'll agree with us on, like, the things that we enjoy, right?
Yeah. They just, and also that the things, they probably didn't agree about the things that are bad. They just didn't bother them as much.
Yeah.
You know, it just waits and measures. And, like, whenever I play something like this where I end up feeling like I had to make a big compromise of friction to get to the part I like, it makes me think that, like, there's got to be a version of this without that compromise. Mm-hmm. And in this game, you know, I would still do a lot of the same things if I could restart the time loop whenever I wanted.
Yeah.
You know, all of the little iterations and everything, all of the little aha moments and stuff would still happen. I would still get the stuff I liked out of it. You know, get rid of the stealth and make it like, oh, you're in an instance zone here. It's outside of time when you're on the stranger because it's phased out or whatever. I would have still gotten everything I liked out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need to. There's a version of this that doesn't have the drawbacks for Gary's, but we haven't found it yet.
So it'll come.
Yeah, it'll come. Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate you. We have if you're listening to this and you're any kind of oppressed person and you have a project or product you'd like us to shout out, we'd be happy to do so. This episode, we have one. Let me pull it up real quick. So we want to tell you about Jenny the Geek, a trans woman who does comic book YouTubes, talking about various subjects there. You know, learning about comics and specifically trying to address things that aren't covered to death. Okay. There. You can find her YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/JennyTheGeek5791. If you search Jenny the Geek, spelled like it sounds, you'll find it as well. I checked her out. It's good. Cool. You know, looking forward to her making more videos. So check out that YouTube channel.
If you have thoughts about this month's games, Majora's Mask, Echoes of the Eye, or Against the Storm, which is our premium episode, you can write in by the 15th. Same thing with October's games, Mouthwashing, The Silent Hill 2 Remake, Cryptmaster, and Fear 1. Write in by October the 15th. Both of those, you just go to duckfeed.tv/contact, click the button for Watch Out for Fireballs, and write in.
Yeah, it's always the 15th of the month. Mm-hmm. Brief is good, and specific is good for these things. If you are in the Pacific Northwest, we're going to be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo this year with our buddies, the Retronauts, and we're going to be hanging out with them, and they're going to be hanging out with us. We're doing a meetup on Saturday at Quarter World. We're doing panels. We don't have information on when the panels are yet, but we'd love to see you. We're not going to do a table. We're just going to be wandering around. Come say hi. Mm-hmm. Come see the panel. We'd be happy to say hi. We'd love to see you.
Yes. Yeah. If you can't get there, you can back us on Patreon, get a whole bunch of bonus content, get the bonus episodes, the full versions of the premium episodes. If you can't do that, we understand. Please rate or review. Subscribe to us on your podcast directory of choice. If there's the ability to like leave comments on the directory of choice, give us a little feedback on there. We have, you know, that is an option that not everybody is aware of.
Yeah. And, we appreciate it. If you like the show, it's a good way to help out.
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't like the show, please keep it to yourself.
Yeah.
Join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, as well, who is currently on tour. Gwen's great.
Gwen's great.
What should they watch out for until next time?
Watch out for shits and giggles.
Mm-hmm.